In 2023, a crack commando unit of retro podcasters joined forces on a panel at LA Comic-Con, but were sent to Comic-Con jail for a crime they didn't commit. These men promptly escaped. Today, still wanted by 80s nerds, they are very easy to find. If you have an 80s nostalgia problem, if no one else can help, maybe you can hire the Night Boys.
Night boys gaga.
Radio, it's true.
All we hear, boy, leaves rustling outside the window. Someone's out the window, peeping at me at night.
Oh.
Night boys. Okay, sorry.
It's a Night Boys rendition of Radio Gaga.
It is. It is. And guys, this is our first episode post LA Comic Con, where all of the Night Boys are together in one collective group.
These nuts.
It's good to see it's that me, I'm Zach. The only one who got the "Let's be in the night as Night Boys" memo. All you guys are in your comfort suites. There, come on.
I can take care of that.
It's true. It's true.
There we go.
Okay.
There we go.
Oh. Well.
Okay.
Sure,
so
dark here.
It is Night Boy Central. It is me, Zach, joined with Dustin, Diallo, Corey, and Paul. Paul is not a figment of your imagination, ladies and gentlemen. He is here in the flesh, representing territory marks.
Or he could be a tulpa. We could have created him through our minds, and he's a tulpa right now.
A what? Tulpa?
What the hell is a tulpa?
Good Lord, it's a magic thing. It's an entity that's created from your belief.
We're not on Hey Boo, my wife's podcast. Everyone should check out Hey Boo. It's a witch's podcast.
Yeah, I was on it. I was on an episode.
You guys were talking about tulpas on Hey Boo?
Now, what did you talk about on Hey Boo, Corey?
Sigil magic, mostly, which involves masturbation.
Oh, my God. What is this podcast?
Paul's like, I'm going to go back to driving now.
It's a witch's masturbation podcast? Your wife is doing a witch's masturbation podcast? That's outrageous.
Outrageous.
No, Corey spent the entire time doing that.
Masturbating? Hey, but that's even ruder.
Did you talk about the Harry Potter broomstick, the vibrating broomstick? Yeah, well, you know about this, don't you? The vibrating broomstick that was recalled and then issued back again. The sisters were stealing it from their brothers and blah, 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 blah.
I've been too preoccupied with my Dune popcorn bucket to think about anything else.
Yeah,
right now.
Is that Dune popcorn bucket in proximity where I could see such a thing?
I can, I'll grab it. Give me 2 seconds.
Oh, this is awesome. Okay. What a treat.
While he's doing that, Paul, I'll show you my Slimer bucket that I just got today.
And for everyone listening, Corey slimed his bucket without Slimer. Oh, there's the dude.
It's bucket. It's like a Cinemark bucket. It's supposed to be like a Cinemark.
Oh, yeah. You bastards!
Yeah. And there's the fuckable Dune bucket.
Whoa. Oh, that's sick! What is that?
Oh, he broke it.
That's like the biggest fleshlight I've ever seen.
Yeah.
Diallo, is it metal on the inside?
Yeah, it's like a regular, it's like a popcorn bucket, and then you just put the
Dune
head on top.
What is, does that, right. what are you,
the marketing people really like? What, you know, what
are, they are you supposed to like juice, like put juice on, like it's like a juicer, or do you put like Skittles or like treats in the Dune mouth while you're like, oh, that's what I'm curious. Or do you stick your hand in there to get the popcorn? You're, tell me about this.
I think you're supposed to stick your hand in it to get the popcorn. That's what I believe. God. My hand is too big. To fit
okay.
into the...
Let's, okay, so it's okay. What is the bottom of the bucket? What does the bottom of the bucket look like? Is that metal too, or is it are people able to cut holes in this bucket?
Yeah, it's a, you know, big feet, big boots, as they say.
Quick question for all y'all. Have you ever seen the movie Diner?
Oh, with all the before they were stars.
Yeah, so there's a great scene in that movie where Mickey Rourke puts a hole in his popcorn bucket, and he sticks himself in the bucket, and so when his girlfriend is picking out popcorn,
yeah,
that's his, and then she's like, I got so excited it burst through the popcorn box. It's fantastic.
Can you imagine?
Okay, I'm gonna reel it back in because I am kind of having a moment here. Today, whenever you're listening to this, is Live Aid. We're going to be talking about Live Aid tonight, thanks to Carrie Ahern. Carrie Ahern is a Podcasting After Dark Patreon supporter. Thank you so much, Carrie, for suggesting the Live Aid topic for tonight. But I'm kind of having a moment here, specifically with you, Dustin, because Live Aid took place in 1985. And you too, Paul, we've covered more matches and more movies from 1985 on $2 Late Fee and Podcasting and in Territory Marks, respectively, and probably on Podcasting After Dark, too.
Well, Robotech was 1985.
Yeah, I was about to say Robotech 85.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, literally on TV Obscura, we just covered Robotech as well from 1985. Dustin, what is going on with the year 1985?
Well, as most historians know, 1985 was the first year that America really started existing as a country. You know,
it was post Olympics, right?
Yeah, yeah. It was post.
Yes,
you
it
know,
was.
All the all them gold ourselves. Medals that we won in '84, and the country was really feeling a unity that. What else can I make up here?
Where in Ronald Reagan's term was it?
Right,
it would have been the start of his second term, I think.
The trickle-down economy.
I think 85 is also when he told Gorbachev to tear down that wall.
This wall,
was that
Mr. Gorbachev, tear
it
down.
Might have been 84.
So I can stick my boot up
I feel
up
like
your ass.
That was later, but you know what? Let's say it was 85.
Yeah, who cares? I mean...
And let's say the historians dispute it, say alternative facts, baby.
I mean, facts stopped mattering, you know, a while ago. So really, whatever we say on this podcast tonight is factual to somebody.
It's well, actual and factual.
It's proper to give a nod to the Reagan era for bringing in a lot of what really became, you know, the Arnold America, big guns, big muscles,
right,
you know, just really made it this huge destination for the rest of the world, in a sense, from a glamorization of, I mean, especially in cinema, but like, this is like, I mean, but a lot of people tend to think, oh, 84 was the year for movies and stuff. So, you know, I still, you give it to that nod of that Reagan era influence, I think.
I mean, 85 was a huge year for movies specifically. I agree with you on that, Paul. But I will say 85 for music was a really big freaking year. So I know in a minute, Corey's going to read the little Wikipedia bio about Live Aid.
Because Wikipedia is the most trusted source of information out there.
Well, we're going to... Well, Corey's going to read the little thing about Live Aid, but then we're going to go into a little bit deeper history because I'm not a huge knowledge base when it comes to Live Aid, but it was a big deal for me when it came out, and everything that kind of happened right before it and right after it as well. So, Corey, why don't you give like the little rundown of the overall synopsis of Live
Aid. It's only a couple paragraphs. It's pretty brief. But
don't
I didn't
fuck it up.
Know what you know. I didn't know much of the history of it myself personally, so this is kind of all new to me because I was 7 when this happened. So I have like very little memory of this.
That's no excuse.
Paul
that's
was
no
three.
Excuse. Zach was there. Zach was there.
I was 5.
Oh, and real quick, 87 was when Reagan told Gorbachev to tear down this wall. That was 87.
Okay.
So the year of Predator. Go. Okay, year of Predator.
Robert,
and
Robert Cop, baby.
Robert Cop fucking owns. Freaking owns.
Live Aid was a multi-venue benefit concert held on Saturday 13th, July 1985, as well as a music-based fundraising initiative. The original event was organized to raise further funds for relief of the 1983 to 1985 famine in Ethiopia, a movement that started with the release of the successful charity single Do They Know It's Christmas in December of 1984. Billed as the Global Jukebox, Live Aid was held simultaneously at Wimbledon Stadium in London and attended by 72,000 people, and John F. Kennedy Stadium in Philadelphia attended by almost 90,000 people. On the same day, concerts inspired by the initiative were held in other countries such as the Soviet Union, Canada, Japan, Yugoslavia, Australia, Austria, and West Germany. It was one of the largest satellite link-ups and televised broadcasts of all time, an estimated audience of 1.9 billion. In 150 nations watched the live broadcast, which was nearly 40% of the world population. And I found that to be staggering considering how much content we have nowadays. We just don't ever get anyone, like any one piece of content will ever get this much attention. You know what I mean? With everything that we possibly have.
You said, Corey, you said 40%, right? But I want to dial it back a little bit before we get into, like, I want to add a little caveat to that as well before we get into everyone's knowledge base, because I have a feeling most of you maybe don't have a whole lot of history with Live Aid.
I keep thinking I'm going to sound like Dirk Diggler and Boogie Nights or something, like trying to spout off all these facts and just really expose myself.
No, it's all good. You could totally. And you know, Napoleon and the Rosicrucian Roar. So in 1984, this is when this started. Bob Geldof, who I think most people will know for the song I Don't Like Mondays, and he was in a band called the Boomtown Rats, and Midge Ure, who was in the band Ultravox, which right before we went on, Corey's like, have you guys heard of that band? And we're like, not really.
Ultravox Sunset Boop about a month ago. It's a banger.
Are you serious,
Diallo? I can't remember the name of the song, but I stumbled across the Ultravox and I was like, oh yeah, I remember this, and I posted it. I'll have to find it. Yeah.
Really? Oh, yeah. Okay. Well, then there you go. And if people are wondering about Ultravox, and Paul is in a Home Depot apparently right now.
Ultravox, what is that? I'm curious.
Ultravox, yeah. Go to Diallo's Armageddon Instagram to watch his Sunset Boops. But so those two guys wrote the song "Do They Know It's Christmas," and that was recorded in 1984 with a who's who of mostly UK artists. And we won't go into the whole laundry list of those performers because we're going to talk about Live Aid. But that song influenced Lionel Richie, Michael Jackson to do We Are the World in the United States, which was recorded in 1985, I believe in February. And there's a documentary about that on Netflix right now, the We Are the World song. But those two songs.
Oh, wait, is that documentary called like The Greatest Night of Pop or something like that? Okay. I was going to watch that actually. Yeah.
Very cool. Well, if you guys have not seen that documentary and you have not heard Diallo sing We Are the World, I highly recommend that documentary on Netflix because it's really, really good. And they toe dip into Live Aid because of Do They Know It's Christmas and because of We Are the World. All of these artists came together to continue this push of contributing and supporting, you know, ending famine worldwide, right? And created Live Aid in 85. And the Wembley concert We will go into the laundry list of guests, the laundry list of artists on that, and the Philadelphia one. We're really going to focus on the UK concert and the Philly one for this discussion. But Dustin, did you watch Live Aid back in 1985?
No.
When did you first hear about Live Aid?
Tonight.
And we're done. No.
And that's the show, guys.
Thanks, guys.
I'm testing your interview skills. They're not good yet, so far.
No, I'm terrible at this.
They're really good.
I believe ABC had the majority of the rights to broadcast the telecast. They did not show it in its entirety, but I think also MTV did. That's where I first saw it on MTV. The VJs, they were hyping up Live Aid on MTV. Right. Oh my God.
Kurt Loder.
You know,
Kurt,
like they're going to show the whole concert and then they cut to like certain segments and we'll talk about those segments, but they didn't show the whole concert. I don't remember seeing the entire show, Wembley or Philly.
The Yugoslavian broadcast is sick.
It was, yeah, it had Durka Durka and the La La La's. They were amazing. Diallo, did you watch Live Aid back in the day? Or what's your first recollection of Live Aid?
I did not. I think I'm the oldest one in this group. So I was like I would have been either.
You were like 19 when this came out.
I would have been in my 40s. I was in my 40s.
He was there.
Right. So I was either, you know, I was either in junior high or like my freshman year in high school. And I don't really remember it very much. I remember it happening. I didn't have MTV. I probably was at youth group or something and I couldn't watch it. I have no idea why I didn't watch it. I do, you know, it's part of my consciousness that it happened, but I don't really have a memory of like sitting around the TV and watching. But I also kind of never really like I listen to music all the time and, you know, but I've never really like plugged into like the idol part of it. So people singing are almost inconsequential to me is about the songs. So,
I get it. I mean, like this is also a time when it wasn't accessible for everyone to watch this stuff, and it wasn't, and you couldn't watch it on repeat. You couldn't pause it and just come back to it later. So I think it was more challenging for people. You know, I know my mom was dating my stepdad at the time and he was a huge music guy and music was a huge part of our family. So I think that's probably one of the reasons why we were like glued to the TV, but equally disappointed that MTV was only showing certain segments and like, oh, let's show a David Lee Roth video now. And we're like, I want to see the performers live, you know? Corey, how about you? Do you have any, what's your base knowledge of Live Aid?
You know, very little recollection of it, you know, actually happening at the time.
This Wikipedia article I just read is my base knowledge.
That is my base of knowledge right there. I didn't have cable growing up, especially not like where I was living at that time. So I didn't even have MTV then. But, you know, now it's like you know, living in the world, you know, growing up in the 80s and everything, I still know about it. I knew it existed. I knew, you know, that was basically it. That's literally it. I knew it existed. And like, and I actually wanted to read the Wikipedia thing because I'd learned shit in that. I had no clue what the point of it was. None of that. All I know is that in a documentary I saw of like one of those I Love the 80s documentaries, they talked about how awesome the Queen performance was. Like that was what everyone was sort of like jamming over, was like how amazing that Queen performance
was. There's a couple fun facts that I'll bring out in a minute, and one of those will be Queen specifically. But it tracks that you didn't, it wasn't in your, on your radar really at that time. And Paul, you were just a wee lad as well. So
yeah, but I was with you. I remember on MTV where I just remember the VJs mentioning it and I wasn't set out to see it or anything, even though looking at the lineup now, at the time, even at five, I was already being introduced by my father to like Dire Straits. So they were on there. You know, Brian Ferry, who's one of my favorite musicians. I think he's
Slave to Love.
Yeah, very, very, yeah, Slave to Love. And then a song I wasn't familiar with. And so when you sent me the track listing, I started kind of going through it. And, but at the time, yeah, like Brian Ferry stood out to me because I loved Legend. That was one of my favorite films as a kid. And he has one of the main songs on that soundtrack. That wasn't in, yes, Live Aid, but anyways, so then I just discovered this Jealous Guy song, and it's awesome. I'm obsessed with it. It's so good.
I will tell you really quickly, going down so this good list of artists from this concert and revisiting some of these acts, I was like, whoa, some of the songs that these artists perform are some deep cuts.
Mm-hmm.
Consider deep cuts, yeah, now.
I love it.
Well, and also Paul brought up a good point, like, especially, you know, kind of from my perspective, when he's like, my dad was introducing me to Dire Straits and stuff. My dad was not a music guy, like, at all. Like, all my movie stuff comes from my dad. And then my mom, we didn't really connect that way when I was younger. Like, we weren't, even though I was raised by her and I kind of grew up with her, I didn't really connect with my mom she was always my mom, like this separate, like, sort of entity. My dad was the guy who showed me the movies, got me to watch Aliens, yada, 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 but not music. So, like, I never had this, like, musical interest background. And then sort of like Diallo, where I always liked the songs. I never really got into the group. Like, oh, I had to, you know, kind of, like, you know, I was into this singer or something like that. I always just kind of liked the songs as a standalone thing. So I think that kind of, when it comes to, like, music and stuff, I mean, I didn't even, like, buy any mini cassettes in the 80s when I was growing up. Okay. I just heard what was on the radio. But if I was by myself, I was drawing or watching movies or something, you know, or playing with toys or video games. I was rarely listening to music. I listen to so much more music now than I did when I was,
well,
like,
let me Dustin, ask you a question real quick. Sorry, before I need to know from a musical standpoint, and this probably veering into the 90s, early 90s. So pardon me, I'm jumping ahead of here, but this is for Corey specific. Were you a Columbia House member?
Did you get
10 albums for a dollar or a penny or whatever that was? Did you work that system at all? Please.
No, and you know why? Because I knew I literally wouldn't have 10 albums.
My man, no, you missed it. You blew it, brother.
You blew it.
What was your excuse again? I wasn't listening. I was thinking of my own, because I'm selfish.
I was just literally, I knew I would not have 10 albums. I would even want.
Really?
Like, I would even know.
Really?
I know, yeah. No, I mean,
really?
That's how blind I was to, like, music and stuff as a kid growing up. So my first concert was STP and Butthole
Good
Surfers.
For you.
So
yeah.
I was a new metal kid.
Good for you. Let me ask you though, had they featured soundtracks on that deal, do you think that would have worked? Like, that would have appealed to you if it had been, like, scores and soundtracks?
No, probably not. My first favorite soundtrack of all time was heavy metal. So if anything from heavy metal on there would have been great. But I didn't love another soundtrack until the Crow soundtrack.
What? Even a score?
Yeah.
The orchestration?
Watching a movie, I could literally, as a kid, care less about the music.
Oh my God.
I know. Guys, I am in the wrong here. I know that this is wrong. I don't want my kid to be here. You know what I mean? Like, I want my kid to have more musical background. And
have you seen the movie Prisoners?
Oh, with, yeah.
Oh, the Villanova one? No, I haven't.
With Hugh Jackman and Jake Gyllenhaal. Oh, okay.
I want
you
to.
You were raised in a similar fashion. Okay. Anyway.
Well,
touche, Paul. Touche.
And Corey, you're not in the wrong. I would say, you know, I think we all equally love music to some degree.
Paul's like, yes,
you're
no,
wrong.
You're
wrong.
No,
but, you're wrong.
But, you know, transporting back to 1985, when, like, for example, I was 9 at the time, and music was a huge part of, I think, the way my mom raised me specifically. And obviously with, you know, with my stepdad at that time, music was a huge thing. And just listening to music, neither of them were necessarily like musically inclined. But this lineup was like a who's who of Columbia House when it comes to artists that I would get the cassettes of. And then now I'm looking at this and they're all playing like three or four songs, right? Or sometimes one. And I'm going, this was like the iPod before the iPod. This was the mixtape before. This was like a mixtape, basically. Of
well, that's why they were calling it a worldwide jukebox.
It was totally that. I mean, Dustin, were you musically like, were you super into music in 1985, or was it something that
I was a member of BMG, the BMG group
guys.
Oh,
BMG.
So
was that
was
one,
a little.
Or am I confused? Which is the BMG?
No, no, it's a rival.
There was a rival.
Yeah, too.
There was a rival. You could do Columbia House.
Diallo, were you because you love music and you love to sing music and you and was music in 85, was that a big deal to you or was it on?
Yeah, I mean, I in a lot of ways, I think the music from 85 was, you had a confluence, using a big word, of you know, there was like Madonna, Prince, Michael Jackson, kind of like all popping right around the same time. I used to listen to music like all day, every day, like on the way to school, doing my homework, like even when I was like Corey, you know, I was like, you were talking about drawing, like when I was drawing, like I listened to it all the time. I just never, like outside of like the big icons, I never really like cared or paid attention to, like, it wasn't until I think the statute of limitations is up, so I can talk about this. It wasn't until I started downloading music on Napster that I really knew the names of some bands. Like I knew
right,
songs,
same.
And I was like, "Oh, this OMD. Oh, okay." I knew the song, could sing it back and forth, but I never knew the names of half of the people that sang them.
I didn't know about the band named Screedy Politi until about maybe 5 years ago.
Until you started stealing music.
No, a good friend of ours, Mark Fong, who is a very musically inclined guy. He's a DJ. I would call him up and I'm like, Mark, what is that song from the 80s where the guy goes, goo, 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 goo? And I'm like, that's all I knew. And he goes, I got need more than that. And finally I heard it on like 80s on 8, you know, on the radio station. And the guy's like, that's from Screedy Politi. I'm like, Screedy Politi? Okay. A Perfect Way by Screedy Politi. Okay, so I want to run down some of, not all of them, but some of the artists that played both Wembley and then at Philly, obviously.
Can I just say, I live off of Shazam. That helps me so much because I'll hear something on the radio, even while I'm driving, I can just click it and then I'll screenshot it. And so three-fourths of my screenshots are music groups or bands or something. You know what I mean? Like, that's thank the heavens for Shazam.
Amen.
And then the other three quarters, the other quarter of screenshots are the ones you do with me on Territory Marks. So,
mixed with some other. The three Territory Marks.
I thought this was
good. Paul's like, sure.
We're taken by four.
Okay, so first of all, and you can find, and maybe we can put the links to the playlists for these two concerts in our show notes. And again, thank you, Carrie, for the suggestion of this,
because I went
down a whole trip of memory lane. You know, the Wembley concert is introduced by, you see Princess Diana and Prince Charles, and you're just like, oh my God, the memories flooded back to me of me thinking like, that's a big deal back then. Now it doesn't matter, we're shit. But you've got bands like the Style Council and the Boomtown Rats, and like we said, Ultravox, but Spandau Ballet and Elvis Costello, right?
Spandy Ballet. It's actually called Spandy Ballet.
Spandy Ballet. Thank you, Corey.
That's what Corey told me.
But then you've got Sting, Phil Collins, and Branford Marsalis performing together. I didn't know Branford Marsalis was around in 1985. I always remember him as being like the band leader for, what was it, Conan O'Brien's late
Branford
night talk
Marsalis
show?
Branford Marsalis and his brother, I think Wynton Marsalis, they've been around. It's black people stuff, Zach.
I mean, look, it was off my radar. Don't out me as a, I'm not.
Don't out him as a white person. It's not nice.
He's gonna lose his card. Now, I will say, I see that Dire Straits did Sultans of Swing. Yeah. That is probably one of my top five favorite songs of all time, like across the board.
That's incredible. Also, can I point out that there is the amazingly iconic 80s classic from Nick Kershaw, who's sporting the best mullet of any of these stages that I can see.
Well, he's got the best British mullet. I would say that Rick Springfield has the best American mullet when we get to the U.S. show.
This might be a mullet off. It might. A mullet off.
But what's the what Nick Kershaw song are you talking about?
Wouldn't it be good?
Oh,
wouldn't
so
it
good.
Be wouldn't it be good to be in your shoes?
Yeah, which was also featured in Pretty in Pink. Right, it's on the Pretty in Pink soundtrack, which is what, 85 or 84?
I think that was 85.
That could be 85, right? I mean, that's the big hit. I think it's the only song that I saw that he had on the track list, but.
But I really quickly, I want to say that, you know, you see Phil Collins at this concert, and then when you go to the Philly concert, you see Phil Collins playing drums for the Led Zeppelin reunion that they did in Philly. And you're like, how could Phil Collins be in two places at once? Well, guess what? He plays Wembley, finishes his set, gets in a helicopter, flies to Heathrow Airport in the helicopter, then takes a Concorde jet from Heathrow Airport to JFK, gets off the plane, gets in another helicopter, and flies to Philly to perform with Led Zeppelin later that day.
That's nuts. That a helicopter is
insane.
Faster than a plane.
Is now the proper time for me to say I don't believe in Concorde jets? I don't think they exist.
Well, they're not around anymore.
They never
existed. They're gone.
Just like birds. Just kidding. Sarcasm.
So anyways, I think ultimately the UK show, which had U2, David Bowie, The Who, Elton John, you know, Paul McCartney, Brian Ferry, but then Queen obviously gets the nod because, you know, their 21 minute performance is impeccable. And we know that Freddie Mercury was having some vocal issues before he went on stage. And so he basically broke through that, powered through having some strain on his vocal cords because he didn't think he could sing very well at that time for that set. It's hands down the biggest highlight of the show, in my opinion.
Yeah, and people even consider it like one of the best like live performances of all time too, specifically the Queen performance.
Yeah, because you've got somebody like, you know, the entire band of Queen. It's not just Freddie Mercury, but everyone in Queen is impeccably perfect at what they do. Brian May has a particular sound of his guitar, which he uses a coin instead of a guitar pick. That's what gives him that particular sound with his guitar. They are so perfect. And their timing, right? They're all so good. And I don't know. To me, I love all the other performers. You know, Sade even. Like, Sade did like four songs, which is crazy. Oh.
It's pronounced Said. Not
stop.
To be a spoil sport.
I'm calling BMG and telling them you have not paid back, you know, $5.99.
Yeah, it was like $18.
Paid at all.
Do you think this is the concert that closes the film Bohemian Rhapsody, isn't it?
It is, yeah, which is cool because they show the entire like 18, 19, 20 minute set.
So is it public knowledge at this point? I didn't see the entire movie. Is it public knowledge at this point that Freddie Mercury's sick with HIV?
No,
not in 1985.
I don't think until he like really till he died, literally when he died.
I think it was in like 90, 91. I think.
Oh, really? Wow.
Yeah.
It was still very see, because this is how my 5-year-old brain works. But I don't know really where where society, culture, whatever was on the AIDS scare at the time, but I know that it was just now starting to just kind of starting really.
Yeah, it was starting at this time. It hadn't. It still was relatively. It hadn't hit its peak yet.
So I was sitting here at like 5 or 6, because there was several Live Aids, weren't they?
Well. So here's the thing. So before we get to that, I just want to quickly say, in Philly, you've got a whole other vibe to it. You've got Black Sabbath, Run DMC. The Four Tops, Billy Ocean, Rick Springfield, REO Speedwagon. They did roll with the changes, by the way, Corey, and because I know you love that song. Judas,
hell yeah.
Judas Priest, yeah. Bryan Adams, The yeah. Beach Boys, George Thorogood, Simple Minds, The Pretender, Santana, Madonna, Kenny Loggins. I mean, like, The Power Station.
Yeah.
And then, of course, Led Zeppelin, almost close. And Crosby, Stills, Nash and Young. Duran Duran, Patti LaBelle, Hall and Oates. Like, Mick Jagger with Tina Turner. It's just insane what they do. And then Bob Dylan, Keith Richards, and Ronnie Wood get together and do songs at the end. That's mind-blowing, that lineup of people. You
that
know?
Was all Philly?
That was all in Philadelphia.
Yeah.
And so this concert's influence, because I was talking to a friend of mine, we're like, when did Farm Aid start? Farm Aid came out in 1985 as well. And that was because of Live Aid had huge influence on that.
I remember Farm Aid. Like, I think maybe that sticks out of my head because I'm like, why is it called that? When did Neil Young leave Crosby, Stills, Nash? And
they were already broken up by the yeah. 80s.
That's what I thought. I was like, but yet they got back together for Live Aid.
Yeah, and same with Led Zeppelin. Yeah. Led Zeppelin, the Jimmy yeah. Page and Robert Plant.
But do we have anything like this now? Like a concert? Like, I'm just trying to think. Like
no.
anything in the 2000s?
Well, so
the world's not
like
united
this?
Enough for that to happen. Right now.
Well,
yeah, you're right.
It's interesting.
You're right, Diala.
It's interesting you guys all say that because Farm Aid is still going on to this day. Which is which, you know, that says something, but we don't have the concerts like we had.
If Kid Rock and the Indigo Girls got together, I think that could be the thing that united the country.
Well, I was saying to my friend that we were saying that I believe the last big concert like this was the one for 9/11, which took place the month after 9/11.
Right.
Oh, that makes sense.
Where was why was Spielberg? Spielberg? Why was Springsteen not invited to this?
So Springsteen, what's the boss?
So Springsteen. Here's the thing. Springsteen and Michael Jackson both declined to go because of their touring, and Prince
yeah,
sent in a
Prince
video
one.
Message.
Wait, but there's apparently. Go ahead.
No, you go ahead, please.
Well, it's so bizarre because we were going to talk about this, and I don't think any of y'all sent me this clip, but I was, you know, since, and I'm not a conspiracy guy, but whatever the hell that overused algorithm and all this bullshit, something is listening, right, and causing us to whatever the fuck. So something came across my feed where it was,
yeah.
And I'm totally blanking on who it was, but they were talking about Prince being approached and how he was more like put off by like who I think he was going to be behind or after or something. Like he was, did you get anything like that? Like I'm trying
to. Well, I didn't get anything like that, but that tracks because Prince was supposed, they were. When Lionel Richie and Michael Jackson were putting together We Are the World,
it was that he was going to be with Michael. I think that was the thing where he was like, no, yeah. Like.
Well, so Prince is an interesting dude. There's a clip online where you've got Prince, James Brown, Michael Jackson, and other big names performing on stage. And Prince comes to the stage to on his bodyguard's shoulders. His bodyguard was this big blonde mulleted guy who looked like a professional wrestler but was not, and he's on his shoulders going through the crowd. This is like a unedited footage from a Grammy show or something.
Master
and
blaster.
He hop, He hops off of his bodyguard's shoulders onto the stage, and it's like a tribute to James Brown, I believe. And he goes and swings on this pole that's on the stage, and the pole falls over. So he falls over, Prince, and then he gets up and he walks over and picks up a guitar and rips an amazing solo, right? But it's so weird because he like wants to upstage everybody else. Clearly, Prince did not want to. He was a quirky guy, you know. And
hell of a basketball probably player. one of the hell of a basketball player.
Anyways, I didn't hear the story about Live Aid, but that kind of tracks. He did send in a video message, but Bruce Springsteen was not there. Michael Jackson was not there. I'd say outside of those guys and Huey Lewis in the News, that's probably the only acts that I would think should have been at Live Aid.
You had me at Power Station. I'm trying to think and track it back if this is. Commando was what, 84 or 85?
I think Commando is also 85.
Wow.
Because that song, they have a song in the on the Commando soundtrack. Yeah.
Yep.
Which is,
I love that movie.
I'm familiar with Power Station because of, and I don't think he was the permanent singer. I think he came in at some point, but is it Michael DeBar?
Well, Michael DeBar did. He came. He filled in after Robert. Robert Palmer. Robert Palmer.
Yeah, Robert Palmer. Yeah. That's right. So I'm trying to think of when that was because there's this movie from I want to say 83 came out in 84 called Ghoulies. Or yeah, the first one featuring Michael DeBar. Opening scene. He's awesome.
If you want to hear more about Michael DeBar, sign up to patreon.com/$2 late fee or patreon.com/podcastingafterdark, and I will tell a fun Michael DeBar story on a future episode of either Tales from the Video Store or Podcasting After Dark's Wrap Up After Dark.
And watch Ghoulies.
And watch Ghoulies. Dustin, out of all those acts in Philly, like which one really stands out to you as like, man, I wish I would have seen that performance.
Like, I mean, I think the reality here is like, if you were somebody who was trying to make your career as a musician and you somehow were not invited to this concert, then that would be the telltale sign that you weren't as good as you thought you were, or like at that point in your career, you know?
Right.
What else are we missing here? Like, think of some other big ones. We're missing a lot of people though, aren't we? Like Cyndi Lauper, where's she at?
I mean, yeah, but like, I don't know if there's a list of like people that weren't invited.
Well, yeah, it's tricky because, you know.
Yeah, because Madonna wasn't there, right?
Oh, yeah, she was there.
Yeah, Cyndi Lauper was the height of her powers too. She could have been
like Tina Turner. Where's Tina Turner?
Well, so there is a little, there is some controversy.
Where's Tim Capello?
Tina Turner played Jagger, right? with
Mick
Jagger.
That is the one. Okay. I do remember that performance. I do remember that seeing the two of them together.
Oh wow!
Oh, Diallo. What about that? What is it about that performance that stands out to you?
Well, it's just the juxtaposition of like wild, you know, Mick Jagger, wild hair Mick Jagger, and then wild hair Tina Turner, and just like sort of like, I don't know. It's like in a way you wouldn't think that the two would go together, but they actually go together perfectly because Mick Jagger took a lot of his sound from a lot of black musicians in the 60s. Yeah. So it goes together well.
I gotta see that one. That's
and
my...
there was some controversy, and this is what sparked Farm Aid, because Bob Dylan said after one of his songs, he said to the crowd, I hope that some of the money that's raised for the people in Africa, maybe they can take just a little bit of it, maybe a million or two, and say to pay the mortgages on some of the farms and farmers here that owe the banks. Anyways, that happened. And then Bob Geldof was pissed that the Hooters were playing. Quote, who the fuck are the Hooters? That's what Bob Geldof said. Flash forward to 2004, and he actually performed with the Hooters on stage.
Amazing. So. Oh, that's so odd. It's all about the
anyways, I mean, there were other things too. You know, Led Zeppelin didn't think it was going to be that big of a deal. You know, it was the first time Phil Collins didn't think performing with Led Zeppelin was going to be that big of a deal, but it was. It was the first time Led Zeppelin had performed since 1980 together.
Wow. Damn.
Yeah. So, I don't know. I mean, I know we're going to start wrapping it up here, but there's a lot more to talk about. And again, Carrie, you clearly tapped on something that was, you know, we don't all have equal investment into this topic, but we all brought something to the table that was unique and special about
it. That's not true. We're all invested equally.
Well, we're all invested equally. I just think we have different knowledge bases that we're pulling from.
I don't know. You're really hooked on this knowledge base thing, but I don't think it's a knowledge. It's not. We're all about the knowledge base.
Zach's just trying.
You gotta let it go. You gotta let it go. I want to see all the acts. I wish I had seen all the acts.
My wheels are like starting to come off. They're like. Brr, 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 brr. Okay, so just to wrap up, and then Corey, I didn't get to ask you, and Paul as well. What's a band?
No, it doesn't matter. Look, Corey just discovered music like last week. Okay, you got to give him a break, and that's fine. And we don't need to wrap it up officially. We should just end it here.
No, come on, really quick,
thank
Corey.
Thank everybody. 1985.
Sultans of Swing. I would like to have seen Dire Straits Sultans of Swing. That's the one I would have wanted to see.
What's the most annoying Dire Straits song, do you guys think? I think it's Money for Nothing.
I'm going to say...
Nope, I think that's a banger.
I like Money for Nothing. I think Walk of Life is probably my least favorite of theirs, but I still like them.
Yeah.
Okay, so, all right, to wrap up, just to quickly say thank you again, Carrie, for the suggestion.
We thanked Carrie six times.
I know.
This is the most thanked Carrie's ever gotten for anything.
Because Carrie deserves it. Carrie's the one that brought this topic to the table. So if you guys have a suggestion, go sign up and become a Patreon. Patreon.com/podcastingafterdark. Patreon.com.
Wait, Paul, what's your favorite Target aisle?
Oh, man, that's a tough one.
Come on, man. It's a toy aisle, of
course. What's your favorite toilet paper to use?
There's the whatever toys. And then there's, like, the kind that are more movie-centric, you know, the NECA toys and all that stuff.
Yeah. I just want to say really quickly.
Thank you to Carrie. Thank you once again.
No. Eric, so I will say one thing that made me shed a tear was watching Eric Clapton play his set and go, man. There was a time when all we did was just listen to that guy's music. He does this song called She's Waiting. It's such a good song. And that was that album that I think he put out that year was the one that Tina Turner's on. And I think Patti LaBelle might be on that. Like, it's got a very soulful side to it. Very like kind of R&B edge. Anyways.
Eric Clapton or Epic Clapping?
Epic Clap. Well, there is Epic Clapping. Thank you for teeing that up, because I think we should play out with Freddie Mercury doing his call and response with the crowd, which is so amazing.
So amazing they made a movie about it.
Hey, you know what? What song, if you had to pick one song by Queen to karaoke to, what would it be, Diallo?
Jesus. Jesus. I actually like Jesus. I've done Under Pressure before. Usually do the Freddie Mercury parts. Can't hit those notes though, but you know, just give it a try anyway. Those Were the Days of Our Lives, actually, is a really pretty poignant song by them that I actually really
enjoyed.
Last song he recorded.
Last song he recorded before he passed away.
Yep. Nice.
Corey, what song by Queen would you karaoke?
Oh, no, I don't karaoke.
If you had to, what would you karaoke? By Queen.
Hold on. I guess Bohemian Rhapsody, I guess.
Okay.
That's fun.
Okay, how about you, Paul?
The Show Must Go On.
Ooh. And then Dustin.
I do Flash.
Okay.
There's like no lyrics to that at all.
Flash. It'd be easy.
Oh yeah, that one's awesome. That one's great. What about the one from Highlander?
Just save every one of us.
Princes of the Universe, yeah.
Yeah.
One Vision from Iron Eagle.
It's a kind of magic.
There's no time for kind of
magic. That would be my tie. I'm tying that one with my answer.
All right. Well, we'll sing our goodbyes. And I used to cover Hammer to Fall, and I think you can find that on YouTube somewhere, me performing Hammer to Fall acoustically.
Wake up in the morning feeling shy and lonely.
Gee, I gotta go to school.
All right, patrons, give us your suggestions, and we will see you next time with another episode of 80s Kids
Unite. Carrie Ahern.
Yes, thank you, Carrie.
When the night boys have come.
And I'm pressing stop.
And the land is dark. And the moon
is the only
cutting
light we'll see.
Wow.
80s Kids Unite is brought to you by Hungry Hungry Hippos, the loudest tabletop game in history. And by Nickelback, Zach's favorite band. If you'd like to suggest topics for this show, go to the Patreon of either $2 late fee or Podcasting After Dark, or both. All links are in the show notes. We love you.
Screedy Politi? Okay.
You're listening to the Geekscape Network.